Well, g'day, and welcome back to another episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian beef industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should be fully aware of the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. Kale, Victor, great to have you on board. Really lucky, I reckon, that we get to do it in person. Thank God, it makes my life a lot easier. Welcome to the table. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ripley. Thank you for having us here. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to be here in Orlando to talk a little bit about this market.
Awesome. I think Aussies are going to really get a lot out of this conversation. I think we're quite fortunate to have the access to you guys. How is the season and seasonal conditions progressing in Brazil for, you know, the major cattle regions? How's the weather? Are we in drought? Are we in good conditions? What's going on?
Yeah. I think that the first thing to understand Brazil, I think Brazil, we have like three phases of cycle, okay?
Yep.
First of all, we have the cow-calf. So after that, we have backgrounding. And the last, we had the finishing. So if you pick it up, Brazil is quite different than other places. So I think Brazil has this, in some points, are different than Australia or United States. The second thing in Brazil, we have grass-fed and green-fed.
Yep.
So this is interesting because when you're talking about weather, when you're talking marketing, when you're talking about price, we need to understand a lot of things. The weather, like the demands, the supply, what's going on, the cattle cycle.
Yep.
So what do we have in Brazil right now, okay? First of all, we have a huge demand. So demand is keep going, it's pushing the market. So this is interesting because the economy is going good at this moment. And this is very good because if you look just at the internal demand, if you have a lot of internal demand, to export, it's more harder because we don't have meat at the moment to both.
Yes.
So the internal market and the external market need to fight for the same amount. Mm. So
to get the product back from the export market.
Yeah. And if you look at the other hand, the external market, like, is everything's very good right now to Brazil. Brazil exporting a lot because if you look, pick it up the numbers, Brazil has meat at the moment. And if you look other countries like United States or China, they don't have enough for the local consumption.
Yeah, I agree.
So they need to go to Brazil or Australia or other place to, okay, you have meat. Oh, I need this meat.
Yep.
So you can see the challenge in Brazil because we have a strong internal market fighting with a good and a huge external market. Mm-hmm. So if you look at this, you can imagine the situation that right now we have a huge demand, but we don't have offer enough for everybody.
Hmm.
Why? Brazil at this moment don't have cattle for those demands.
Yeah.
We are crossing a period in the cycle, and this period right now that we're crossing, we don't have females enough to complete the amount that we need.
Yep.
Last year, we used to have female and male enough. to go to all the markets. But right now we are suffering that. So you can imagine the situation that, so if you don't have offer enough, but you have a huge demand, the pricing, it's going up. And this is interesting because we are looking right now, the cattle is growing. If you pick it up like 12 months, the cattle increased 10%.
The herd grew 10%.
Yeah, but the cow
last year.
In price.
In price.
Process. Yeah.
Wow. But if you pick it up, the calf, 22%.
Yeah.
So you can see the movie, and in the picture right now that we're looking, you can understand why, what's going on. So you don't have offers. So because of that, the youngest cattle is more expensive than the old cattle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
finished. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So right now, guys, in Brazil, we are looking at a huge price. The price is going up. Of for sure, the calf price is going more than cattle price. But you can imagine the future if the demands continue to go like this and the offer continue going like this, maybe the price is still going up for a long time.
So, Victor, I'll throw it to you. If what Australians would call wiener prices, but you know, calves.
Yes.
If that market is strong and the finished price is not as strong, does that indicate any, to you guys, any kind of herd rebuild in Brazil? Or are we just simply looking at economics where the lighter cattle prices are stronger because there's demand? Like what's going on?
So besides the strong demand that Caio mentioned of domestic consumption going good and external market, exporting are going good, we're starting to suffer a shortage in supply. I see what's the rest of the world faced the 2-3 years ago, we started to see now. So that's one of the main reasons when you talk to calf prices, feeder prices, they went up more than actually the finished cattle. So as I said, 10% year to year on cattle finished prices, but on the calf, 22%. So that brings us to a scenario that we're probably going to be seeing the amount of cattle that are finished this year less than the previous year that we did in 2025, probably, yes.
So you're talking about finished, and I'm of the understanding Brazil is diversified a bit like Australia, but the majority is grass-fed. You talk about numbers of finished cattle. Give us an indication on grass and grain split. Like, is it all grass? Is it all grain?
Just a couple big numbers for you guys. Brazil has the biggest herd in the world. So we have around roughly 240 million heads. It's more than our population, which is pretty funny. And when you bring to like the category that is finished, we finished last year of grain fed around 8.5 million heads. And we finished a total of 41 million. So you see a gap of 32 million that are finished in grass fed or mixed between grass and grain. But most of the cattle that are sent to the meat packers are finished on grass. That's the thing. I think the world talks a lot about Brazil. You see a herd with 240 million heads, finishing just 40 million heads per year. So it's pretty low when you compare it to US, to Australia. Yeah. You can talk better than me. And you see the numbers of finished cattle on grain, it's 8 million. So 8 million out of 240 million of herd is finished on grain. So you see the huge potential that Brazil can have in the nearby future, because the technology is coming. Brazil, it's getting more numbers when we talk inside a farm. So gain per day, it's getting. So the corn is getting to more places. So we see huge potential in this, and probably Brazil will grow each year on feed yards. When we talk to our clients, we see this business growing. Our clients, they're all growing because they see this margin, it's a good margin. The margin with the corn is pretty good. So we see these numbers getting bigger and bigger. We probably have in between this next year. We're not sure if we're going to have a decrease on the amount of finish, the total, if we're going to have 39 this year, 2026, but we are 100% sure that we're going to see a growth in the grain fed amount.
Yep.
If we finish 8.5, we're probably going to see 9, 10, and we keep coming.
Brazil have been pushed to produce more after COVID. Oh, after 2019.
Yep.
And Brazil have been pushed to produce more. So we need produce more, we need more cattle on feedlots. So I think for the next years, we're going to see more cattle in grain fed because we need more cattle on feedlots, you know?
And I think, like, to give you guys context on Australia, what really developed our Australian, like, feedlot system, grain fed system, it started as drought mitigation simply because if Australia is such a dry continent, when it got dry, we'd just push the cattle into the feedlot. But what actually sort of transformed from that was consistency of supply and consistency of product.
Yeah.
So obviously Australia is very well known for all its brands and structures and all those sorts of things. But grain fed or grain feeding or lot fed cattle really developed that market quite quickly.
Yeah.
And from the outside perspective, I can see you guys going down that route quite quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like people, China's your biggest export market. They demand a product, great, but they want consistency.
Yes.
They'll pay for it. How do we do that? Obviously, grass-fed, as we all know, it can fluctuate so much with season. The writing's on the wall for me looking to you guys is grain fed is going to become very big.
And you know, Brazil used to do feedlots just on second semester.
Yep.
Because they ran.
Yep.
And right now we are doing feedlot all the years.
Yes. And so, what in terms of second semester, what timing, like what would that look like within a year because of the season?
So we have more cattle on feed, I would say, starting in July.
Right. July,
August, September, yeah. October. Then you see a decrease because the rain start coming.
Yeah.
So, right. What's funny, I would say back in time, the same reason that started the grain fed, we have the drought in this type of year. You want to finish cattle, so you got to push them into the feed yard. But then that changed a little bit because when we got accepted to export to China, that happened in 2019, it was a market that we didn't touch. And what's funny, we would have 20%, 25% of our beef was exported in that moment, in 2019. And then China came and said, it would buy from us, but it would buy aged to 30 months. So it's like, how can you produce a finished cattle on a grass up to 30 months
under that
exactly
limit?
So with that is basically it started to have more cattle in feed yards and able to reach that that age in order to get the bonus and on the meat packers. So then the you saw this huge increase over this, let's say, past 7 years on grain fed in order to feed this market. And when you talk to this market, we finished last year with 37% of our beef being exported. We jump, and if you go back to 2015, it's like 10% of our beef was exported. So we are talking about more than one third of our beef produced is exported.
Yeah, wow. And on that, like, I'd be interested, you've been with Stonex a long time, you've been in the agricultural space a long time. Give me your views from a Brazilian South American perspective, how the Brazilian beef industry has changed in the last, let's call it 5 to 10 years. What have you seen that is, how's it changed?
Yeah, I was talking with Victor about this, and I think China was like a game changer for Brazil, you know. We used to do beef just for internal consumption, just for Brazil. And after China, I think the game changed.
Yes.
So we were pushed to produce a young cattle, like 30 month, better cattle. And I think the industry saw this like an opportunity, because at that moment, they used to have just the internal consumption, but right now they have internal and external.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, the margin is better internal, sometimes external. So I think the industry right now is more observing the external market, the internal market, because they are looking a better market with high margin.
Yep.
And I think they change a lot. So Brazil will have three big companies. For sure, we have other companies, but...
And which ones are they? Which are the big ones in Brazil?
I think JBS.
JBS. Marfrig.
Marfrig.
That's National Beef in the U.S. And Minerva, yes.
And Minerva.
Those are the three.
Yeah. And do you know, I think looking the market in Brazil right now, we can see like the internal consumption is changing.
Is it going down? Like, are you seeing less beef consumed domestically and obviously more going export because of the dollars? Or how's the dynamic looking at a Brazilian level at a domestic consumer?
Depend the cuts, you know.
Does it?
Yeah, because Brazil, right now Brazil exporting some cuts that not used to internal consumption.
Yeah.
We basically export, let me jump here, front quarter.
Yeah.
So that's what the market wants for us is basically front quarters. And what's pretty good for Brazil is that our population likes hand quarters, sirloin,
all your primals.
Loins, exactly, all our primals.
Yep.
So that's what we like to eat. Like, Brazilians like to eat this type of beef.
Yep.
So then what is good to meat packers, you have this hand quarters going good for Brazil. And the front quarter wasn't that great here in Brazil, but now you're exporting with a better price in dollars. So it was a perfect marriage between the external market and the domestic consumption.
And it's funny because Australia's the same. So we as domestic consumers obviously love our primals, strips, cube rolls, tenders, etc. That's great. That all stays there. And the rest of the body or the rest of the carcass goes overseas because there'll be someone in Asia or America that like it. And Australia's export market was developed on that until importing countries started paying more. And then it's got to go overseas.
Yeah.
And by the sounds of it for you guys, the same is applied whereby China and whoever else you export to, they pay the higher price. You know, the beef industry and the supply chain goes, we're going to send to them because they obviously, they're willing to pay the money for it. And it sounds like that's the case.
Exactly.
We watch Brazil closely in Australia. Or we think we do. But what I'd be interested in understanding, and it's been a big topic of conversation in Australia, KO, you mentioned it about production, and you believe that we're going to see a decline in production and exports volumes in total for 2026. A question to both of you, what do you think this year's going to look like in terms of, I mean, slaughter is important, but ultimately beef production and beef export volumes for Brazil, are we going to see it higher? Or you see it lower compared to last year? I'll start with Kaya, what's it look like?
Yeah, you can start.
Yeah, so we finished last year, we sent 3.2 million tons to overseas. 3.2 million tons, yes. We were the biggest exporter.
Yeah, and you're going to be the biggest exporter for the history.
Probably.
We're getting used to that.
Exactly, and what's funny, a couple, they still don't have the finished number, but apparently Brazil was the biggest producer for the first time also.
That would not surprise me.
Yeah, took that from the U.S. that was carrying this title for a long time. And then when you see this, we're probably going to see a shorter in supply this year. We'll be starting to see, let's say, I mean, this first 2 months already showed us that, but I wouldn't see a huge decline in exports. I think when you look the balance sheet of the world, I mean, Brazil gotta send this beef overseas. So we're probably gonna see a fight between our domestic consumption between our exporter, because I think the world will be paying a lot to get this beef from us. And I would say, in my opinion, would have to see a steady number. I wouldn't see as much as a big growth on beef exports, but I would see, I'm not afraid of decline in exports this year.
Yeah, so stable to a bit more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe Brazil, like for the internal consumption view, pay more for the beef.
Yes.
Because it's a fight. You know, it's the same amount to both markets, and which one is paying more?
100%. And if I want Brazilian beef, like as a domestic consumer, I'm going to have to cough up and pay for it to compete with what, you know, KO can pay as an exporter. And Australia's seen that a lot. And I think to give you both context in Australia, what we find is the lower quality product actually stays domestic. And then any of the higher quality stuff, you know, our Angus or mid to long fed cattle, Angus, Wagyu, whatever, that goes export because we as Australians don't want to pay that much. Mm-hmm. But there's someone overseas that does. And I think you'll find domestically, just looking from an outside perspective, you'll see that happen whereby the consumer buys it and they will pay up, but they'll only pay to a certain point because of the quality. Yeah. And then the rest of the beef or your good stuff is shipped, you know, China, US, whoever.
Exactly. And we talk a lot to our clients that are meat packers, and they think we probably pretty soon reach 40% of our beef products being exported.
Yeah, so wow.
One thing that was like 10 years ago, 10, 15%, we can have a 40% pretty soon of our beef being exported.
So 10 to 15% a decade ago, and now we're at 40.
Yep.
Jesus.
We used to export to places like Russia, I remember, on other places. In 2019 came China. Last year came 2024 came United States.
US, yeah.
Mexico,
maybe in future Japan and South Korea. So all the markets are coming, you know, because, you know, the balance sheet right at this moment helped Brazil, you know, and everybody need beef. And looking at the balance sheet, looking at the USDA data, Brazil has some volume.
Yeah. Well, as you say, it's the biggest producer in the world, and it will be for the rest of time.
And like Victor said, Brazil has a huge herd, but we can increase our number on feedlot. Yes, you know?
And that's I think for Australian listeners, that's the game changer. If you guys start pushing, you know, we're talking about 8.5 million today, but let's have this conversation in 2 years' time, you might be at 12 million to 15 million, maybe 20. Like, it'll grow that quickly. That is what, that is the game changer.
We have corn, you know. We have everything in Brazil because Brazil have two crops, safra and safrinha.
So tell me, KO, about corn, because to my understanding, you guys are getting to the point where you can plant three corn crops in a very short amount of time, like within a year or 18 months. Tell me about how the corn cycle works in Brazil, and obviously the offtake from that is the corn itself that ends up in a feedlot. But just to give Australian listeners some perspective, from what I understand is you are getting much better at producing corn. You're very good at doing it, and obviously you've got the climate to make it happen.
Yeah.
Explain to me the production system and how quickly you guys can produce.
I think the first thing is about technology. The technology inside the corn or soybean is growing year past year. So Brazil right now is cropping two times per year. The first ball is the safra, like the winter safra. The summer safra. And we have the safrinha in the winter time. So because of that, we are capable to do a lot of corn production in a year. So, and right now in Brazil, we have corn enough for everybody. We have corn to export. And this is good because we have all the things is necessary for the cattle. Mm. And this other important thing, a rancher in Brazil could be a rancher, but could be a corn producer, a soybean producer, a cotton producer.
Yeah, they've got everything.
Could do everything in the same area.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can do in a, 1 year, soybean, corn, and cattle. It's capable to do everything in 1 year. You can start with soybeans. After that, you can put corn, and after that, you can finish cattle.
Right, yeah.
Okay, you can soybeans. After that, you put cattle on grass feed on the same area. So Brazil has land.
Yeah.
And the climate.
And productive land.
Yeah.
Yeah, productive.
Yeah.
A lot more reliable than Australia. It chooses to rain. It doesn't rain. It doesn't know what it wants to do.
Yeah.
And one thing that kind of changed, it's kind of recently, I would say, it's we grew a lot in ethanol corn production in Brazil.
Yeah.
And when it brings that plant of ethanol, corn ethanol production, it brings the DDG that the feed yards start to use. So it's pretty common. A corn ethanol plant comes, and then we have those huge farmers that are used to soybean and corn, and the plant comes the DDG, and it's like, okay, maybe we can start a feed yard here because I have that supply, I have that, and then we start to see northern farmers that are just basically soybean, corn, a couple times cotton as well, just starting going to cattle, and it's good in terms of also risk mitigation, right?
Yeah.
You have like
diversification.
Yeah, that's the 3 to 4 commodities in your property. So it's a risk.
If you look at Brazil, has everything to produce more, faster, and cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's for Australia, that's the scary thing. Like, you're clearly productive, but you're talking about now 2 corn crops.
Yes.
In 1 year. Obviously, we feed mainly wheat and barley in our feed yards. Corn is tiny, if non-existent, but you're delivering 2 corn crops per annum, and your feed lot system or numbers of cattle on feed is growing. That to me is very significant. I think it's interesting for us to understand how you guys are obviously changing to become like Australia and then ultimately like the US. And I think from an outside perspective, we look at Australia and we went from about 20 to 25% of our slaughter numbers each year were grain fed. Mm-hmm. Now we're about 40%. So it's growing quite.
Yeah.
Well, and it's over a long time, 20 to 30 years, but you guys will be the same.
Yes.
You'll see that 32 billion out of 40 on grass fed continue to decline, and you'll see grain fed.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, doing great. Sure.
Yeah, we have the land valorization, I think.
Yeah,
and you know, so and for sure, we can prove we can produce more on feed a lot.
Yeah,
and right now we have the rancher, but we have big companies doing the same job. Mm. You know, the same game, so they can put more efforts to do this, so more cattle, like big feedlots. Because in Brazil, you used to have like just small feedlots, 2,000, 3,000. Right now, we are looking like 150,000.
That's a big one, 150,000.
I don't know if the biggest one is.
We have feed yards of capacity of 80,000.
Capacity.
Doing 2.5 turns.
Yep.
So
similar.
Like
similar to Australia. Our biggest ones, Planet Stonex, Morton Co. Their grassdale feedlots 78,000, and that's the biggest one in Australia. So it's similar, but I reckon you guys will be 100, 150.
I don't know if you have in Australia, but in Brazil you have Boitels. It's a cattle hotel.
Yes,
doing services for the cow calf and backgrounding.
Yep.
Producers. So we have other business in Brazil running right now. Not just the feedlot. We have Boitéis feedlot. So we are looking more business on cattle sector. You know.
Yep.
Because everybody's looking. Oh, the balance sheet. Oh. Here, Brazil need to produce more. And everybody asking for this.
And the demand is there. They want more. Yeah, yeah, they want more. So they look to you and say, what can you give me, but we need more.
Yeah, because some if you look at in the past, sometimes, the export is good, but internal demand is not really good. But right now, we have all the plants on the...
Aligning.
Yeah,
100%. And
we don't have offer. We have a huge internal demand, and we have a huge external demand. So in the end, I think the price will be the answer for this.
Determines exactly where it goes, yeah. And I think it's the same as Australia, as I said. Whoever pays gets what they want, and that's how Australia works. If you guys are prepared to pay more, well, we're sending it to you. We're not keeping it at home, and that's why you see the lower quality in general in Australia, because you guys overseas in, China, the US, UK, wherever, are prepared to pay for it. And as I said earlier, your market will develop the same. It'll go overseas, and that's just what happens. Victor, for context, I don't know if you know the numbers off the top of your head, Australian carcass weights on average, so this is grass and grain fed, and we work in kilos, ours are 310 kilos per head. What would Brazil's be of last year?
Last year, I would say average would be around of grass, grain fed, or the overall?
Overall,
I would say around...
Just to give some Aussies some context.
What kilos?
It must be 200 and something.
In Brazil, you have carcass built. I don't know, in Australia, you have the carcass.
Yeah, same. I would say around...
There's about 55.
Yeah, in Brazil, it's like this.
Yeah.
55-56%.
Yeah. I think it's...
I would say around 280, 300.
Yeah,
300. Around their carcass weight.
Let's do the math.
I'll say a 55%. But you carcass yield.
You imagine if the average is 280 and you go to 300 and you kill 40 million cattle a year, how much of a lift that can be in production?
Yes, and like, we are seeing an increase on that weight as well. So
yes,
beside we're talking about just number of heads, but of beef production we're also increasing, because this we're finishing. I always say this line, we're finishing more cattle in a shorter period of time, heavier.
Yep, 100%. And Australia's the same. And I completely agree. And from an outside perspective, what you've said today is we're going to feed more cattle, and they're going to be turned out of more cattle are going to be turned out of feedlots. And obviously through grain-fed production, the weight is heavier. So to me, it seems like even if slaughter declines, if the herd was to stay stable, you're still going to produce more beef because you're putting more kilos on an animal.
Yeah.
Even if, the US is a great example. Ryan Turner, we had on the podcast last episode. Ryan said we've killed 4 million head of cattle in the US less than what we did 10 or 12 years ago, but they produce more beef, obviously all to do with carcass weight.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
You might even have a reduction in kill numbers, but because you grain feed them, that's just the way I look at it. I don't know what you guys think, but that's how I see it.
Yeah.
It's for sure. That's all the market in Brazil. We're going to see, we probably will see sometimes a decrease in heads, but killing heads, but not in beef production.
Yeah, it's not a lot. Yeah. Pivoting... A question to both of you. The start of this year has been chaotic. We had China on the 1st of January, and now we've got the Middle East. Okay, I'll just start with China. What was the reaction to that announcement? I believe Australia and Brazil got shafted. I felt like we copped the short end of the stick there with that one. What are your views from a Brazilian perspective about that Chinese announcement?
So that was something that I would say we were, it's a news that we were waiting. When we were talking to our clients during 2025,
it
was a matter of time.
Yeah,
like, it started in 2024 in the end of November. So the
the safeguard
investigation. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
And it's good to understand a little bit why China is doing that. When you bring in 2015, China was consuming just 9% of his beef came from another country.
Yeah.
91% was
domestic
production.
Yep.
In 2025, 33% of their consumption came from another country. Yeah. So China saw that, saw increase in consumption by 100% and production 30%. So,
and soil fever helped like this change, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It helped Australia. Holy shit, did. Well, Australia didn't really export much in sort of prior to 2012 or 13. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the export charts for Australia, a bit like you guys, all of a sudden it just, it just climbed, you know? And then we had swine fever in, 2018?
Yes.
And then obviously that added another layer, and they ended up being our biggest exporter, Australia was biggest market for the first time ever. In the space of 5 years, they just went from nothing to enormous.
Exactly. And so China is looking at this situation as like how 2030 will look like, how 2035 will look like. I don't want to depend 50% of my beef consumption in the rest of the world. Mm. So China started this safeguard investigation and had a due date August of 2025, and that got postponed. Then got postponed. But when we were talking to our clients, they said, I mean, something is going to come up with that. We don't think it's like, okay, it's all good, let's keep going. So we were kind of ready. We got, we got surprised the date, because it was the 31st of December, right? The last day of the year, the news came out, and with volumes for, and different volumes from each country and tariffs. So Brazil got the biggest volume for sure, 1.1 million. So,
but it was still lower than what you exported last year. Last year you exported, what I can see, it was 1.6 million.
Yes.
And you got 1.1.
Exactly.
So you got shafted like Australia did.
Exactly. So we were like, I mean, we were looking at the numbers and say, we and Brazil and Australia has some issues that we will have to face in this year of 2026. And then got the market really confused is because when Brazil exports a lot to China, it's October, November, December. It's our, let's say, we export the whole year, but the last try is pretty good. The last 4 months of the year is pretty good.
So it's
because, exactly, because we want this beef to arrive for Chinese New Year's. New Year's Eve. Yeah.
Because so then, how many days to export?
It's around 40 days from port to port.
So it's similar.
Exactly.
It's probably a bit less, but pretty similar.
So what got us really worried, because the quota starts of beef that arrives in China. And then November and December together, we exported 300,000 tons to China with beef that will arrive in 2026. So we're talking about 30% of our quota already being sold, already being gone in January in 2005, that would arrive in 2006.
And they weren't nice enough to take that off. They sort of forgive it. They added it.
Yeah.
And then your quota, obviously, now you're back to...
Yeah, we have 70%.
100,000 or whatever.
So it's January 1st, and we have 70% of our quota remaining.
Australia's done, I think it's close to 40%. And it's 2 months, and it's the same situation. We shipped all that product last year for Chinese New Year, and they didn't excuse that or forgive it.
Yep, same.
They added, they accounted for it. So now we're at 40%, we're 2 months in.
Yeah.
Like we're April, May, and we're shot. We're out.
That's kind of the month that we're thinking, June, May, between May and July.
I think this is the biggest question. And when?
Is that what we're doing? Yeah, we're the same. And now I don't know what you guys, like your exporters and packers are doing, but ours are they're pulling cattle off feed early and they're jamming processes full of grain-fed cattle and they're getting it in a ship, in a container, and they're getting it over there as soon as possible. So we think it's going to happen sooner than
expected. Right now we have a running for the for this beef. So
we're on the same page.
In this month, we saw this happen in Brazil. A lot of Chinese calling Brazil, we need beef. And because of that, the price, I think, dropped 5-10%.
Meat packers are selling out to Chinese market at $6,800 a ton. We were selling $5,600. So we had a jump of $1,200 per ton.
That was a ton.
In, I would say, 2 to 3 months in difference. Yeah. And that was crazy. When the news came out, we had like the futures went down because, I mean, it's a bad news. Then we saw the Chinese importers coming crazy to buy it and the futures went up. And giving an idea to the Australian folks, the moment is, Kyle said, shortened supply, it's January, February, we don't have as much cattle ready to go. And we have good domestic consumption that's going pretty good. And then we have the Chinese market that went up from 5.6 to 6.8, trying to get this as much as beef they can before the quota. So the price went up. We saw the price going up in Brazil 10 to 15% since January 1st. So we kind of got the market pretty crazy. Yeah. This first drive for sure.
Yeah.
But we're always looking forward to how it's gonna look like when we hit the quota. So it's something that we talk to our clients every single day. We have a couple clients that think that Chinese will negotiate this. A couple done. So I mean, we saw a huge increase in volatility price. And as Kyle said too, we saw this feeder cattle and calf cattle is going up
through the roof.
So
jumped a lot because maybe China did the math. Okay, I have a quota, but I don't have enough.
Yeah.
So the world is short in beef.
Yeah.
So I need buy beef.
And that's what confuses me is they're not. I can't see where they're going to get the product from.
Yeah.
Like. They can buy it from Canada and the US, that's fine, but they're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And as we all know, US cattle prices are through the roof.
It's not the same beef that they need, you know?
No, correct. Yeah, I agree. You guys produce a different product to what's going to the US, what's going to China. I'd be interested in your views. We have been watching for a while, and you mentioned it earlier, KO, whether you're going to get access to South Korea and Japan, that I think for Australia is a big if. What have you got thoughts? Do you know any more? Is it going to happen? Is it not? Like, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think the Brazilian government is trying to reach out to them, like to open new markets from Brazil. We don't know when.
Yeah,
but we think soon. But we can say like a specific. Date for this, but we think soon.
Yeah,
but I think in the end, everybody is doing the same math.
Mm. It's money.
Yeah,
it's all money guy.
Yeah, is money and looking the balance sheet, like who have beef and who need beef, and on this math, Brazil, Australia, maybe Argentina or Paraguay, we don't have a lot of countries that have the chance to supply. Everybody,
yeah,
you know, so maybe I don't know if Victor agree with me, but I think soon Brazil will start exportation for Japan, South Korea, and you know, right now, because in the past, Brazil can't export to Japan because to export to Japan, you need like a stamp to export to Japan before you need to go to like American market. So after that, you can try to go to Japanese market. But I think right now Brazil had like this stamp because Brazil is already exporting to US. So I think it will be more easier to export to Japan or in South Korea.
Yeah, I think so too. In my opinion, I think it will be a matter of time. When we talk to our meatpacker clients, they say it will happen, but I mean, the dates, it's something that everyone is looking for. And we know that's a huge market. You guys know it's a really good client.
50 years, yeah.
Of ours. But one question is always, when you bring this Japan and South Korea topic, it's, does Brazil have the type of beef that they want? That's a hot topic, I would say, in Brazil right now. And it has two point of views, I would say. When you talk to our clients, they say, oh, so just Japan and South Korea only buy the most expensive marbling top quality beef? Or do they have a market for this headquarter as well, for the food service? Yeah. Maybe Brazil could access this market, this food service market, as Brazil do in the rest of the world. And the other ones say, okay, yeah, it has this market, but Japan and South Korea like the good quality of beef. But Brazil, not at the moment, produce what? Cattle with 30 months to go to China. 2 to 30 months to go to China. So, and why we do that? Because China pays more, and the meat packers pay a premium for the ranchers, for the feed yards. So why couldn't the meat packers buy a premium for now, not just age, but quality? Let's say Angus. We have Angus in Brazil, and a couple of clients do this business. Sometimes the margin not as good because of what? Because of the premium. But if we have Japan and South Korea paying more to get this good quality of beef,
competition,
they will produce.
100%.
They will produce. This Angus semen will get more in our cows, and ranchers will do that. I'm 100% sure. We're just waiting the meat packers to get this approval, and Japan tells what type of beef they want, how much are they willing to pay, and then I think we'll start that market. I'm not sure yet if it's going to be the, let's say, the headquarter, the commodity, let's put it that way, or the good quality, but I think we'll go there.
It'll be the good stuff, I think. Don't want to scare people, but from what Victor's just said, I think it's a pretty clear reminder. If you need to pivot because Japan and South Korea say you want X, and then you can grain feed and do it with a larger volume than Australia at a much cheaper price, you know, dollars per kilo, cents a pound, whatever. I think it's something Australia needs to be aware of, is if you get signals, and that's how supply chains work. You get a signal from the buyer,
yep,
or the customer, and they say, do this, so you do it. If you guys can pivot like you can, which I assume you will, at a cheaper price and do a lot more of it than Australia can, I think Australia needs to be aware that is a real thing.
Yeah, and it's scalable. In Brazil, everything is scalable, 100%. Right now.
100%.
If you can produce Angus, because right now we are producing Angus, but it's a business, but not a big business. Maybe in the future could be like a big business. Because I think Angus in Brazil used to consume all Angus beef. I don't know if we are exporting Angus beef as the moment. I don't know, I'm not sure. But maybe in future it could be a good business, because, you know, you're talking about margin. You're putting value in your product. So I think Brazil has all things that need to improve, to grow this business. So, but as Victor said, we don't know when, but it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, no, it'll happen. Getting close to closing it out, we're talking markets, but I think for the Aussie listeners, it would be good for them to understand what Sterinex Brazil and South America offers. I'll start with KO. What do you guys do? What do you give your clients?
Yeah, this is interesting, because I started with this type of service, but at the time, I used to work in a feedlot, in a big feedlot in 2010.
Long time ago.
A little time ago, yeah. And at that time, Brazil didn't look like the financial market as a tool to hedge. It was just, this is financial market, that's okay. But I think after 2019, and after the China came to Brazil, I think it was a big game changer in Brazil. I think right now, all the feed all of the lots is trying to figure out a problem. Which problem? Okay, I want to produce cattle, but I don't know the price in the end. So it's a risk. And Brazil, the interest rate in Brazil is 15%. So you're putting a lot of money in a yard, but you don't know how going to be the future. And as you know, the volatility in the market right now, I think because of that, we have information sent plus second. You know what's going on in, around the world in just 1 second.
Just check what Mr. Trump says, and I'm sure. I'm sure it'll do something.
And I think right now, and of course, we have more companies doing that. You know, so the math is, right now is more important than 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So all the producers, all ranks are looking at us. Okay, Starnex, I know you're the best to do that. You're the best come to do risk management. So come here, listen to me how to do that. And I think this is our work in Brazil. This is our job. We're dealing every day, 24/7, with feedlots and meat packers. But I think we have the most important clients today is feedlots. We're dealing 24/7, like, okay, let's do the math. I want to buy a feeder. Let's do the price on B3. Right now we are in March. Let's do the price in June or May.
June, July.
Yeah. So this is profitable or not? Oh, this is profitable. Okay, let's do it. We're going to buy the feeder. You're going to sell the futures
and lock the margin.
Locking
the margin.
Yeah, so we're dealing with this every day, every time. And we are writing a lot of hedge policies.
Yes, sure. I can imagine.
Yeah, because the feedlots are growing a lot. So our work right now, I'm sure we are the best in Brazil doing that. And we have all the tools to help the feedlots and the meat packers in Brazil. So our work right now is help the ranchers, help the meat packers to deal with price. Because we know the price right now it's going up. So this is good for the producer. Maybe in the future, we don't know. The quota, we don't know. Yeah, if the price drop 10%, the math is not the same.
No. And your margin, it's...
Yeah, first struggle.
And what if I like to add for Kyle, it's in... Besides that, Stonex, our team, our cattle team in Brazil, are constantly visiting our clients. So boots on the ground, we visit our clients. We try to understand what are they expecting for margins, because it's funny, when you get to a rancher, they have different ways of doing that math. Mm. If they want to, which types of tools they want to use. So it's our job to try to understand their business and try to help them with hedge this. And it was a big game changer for a long time for us to get you know what price will be in the future, and that we're never gonna have 100% sure if price going up or going down. But we know how much is a feeder in your region. You know how much is the corn in your region. You know how much is your cost of production, and we know that the futures are at this price. So we know that's the margin. And so let's secure this margin. Let's try to understand how this margin affects our business. So that's our, I would say, the biggest advantage that StoneX has in Brazil. Yeah. Being with client constantly, visiting the client, and trying to understand 100% of the client business.
In the end, it's not about marketing. In the end, it's about finance.
Yeah.
Our margin. Yeah. And we have in Brazil R&P program. So you're dealing with clients. Okay, let's do that. Let's do our work. Like, we start with a training. After that, we do a plan with the clients. We write a hedge policy. And after that, the cattle team execute the hedge policy, monitor the hedge policy to look if the policy is working or not. So we are dealing 24/7 with all the policies and do the math every time
okay, let's do that. Buy this cattle. No, sell this cattle. No, wait a moment. And we are doing all those things, looking marketed for sure, and trying to understand what's going on, what's going to be in the future. But the most important thing is the math. Yeah. It's the finest.
It's money.
It's money.
So money talks, doesn't it?
For sure.
No, it's interesting, I think, for Australians to understand what you guys do from an external perspective. Our market's quite insulated. We're all very close, but I think it's good for our listeners to understand, you know, what StoneX offers somewhere else. And obviously in the cattle space, as we're talking today, it's all about managing margin.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to help impart on people, is the same thing in Australia, is it's all about money.
Exactly.
Lock in profit, move on with the next job, sort of thing.
Yeah. And if you let me, Rubel, like also to ask you a question before you go.
Yeah.
And how does Australia see Brazil? How do you guys impression in Brazil production? What do you guys hear from us? And adding to that topic of Japan and South Korea, what are your thoughts on, is Brazil going to be a competitor? Mm. Or you think Japan won't touch us? How do you feel on that?
I think, so I probably shouldn't talk on all of Australia, but my view is I see Brazil as a major competitor. Period. There's no other way to put it. I think to answer your question on broader Australia, Victor, I don't think broader Australia understands how much of a competitor Brazil is and will become. On market access, I don't think we also understand collectively how close Brazil is to getting access to those markets. We probably should think about it, but we do see the fact that it's coming. We just probably don't realize, I think, collectively how big you guys are. And I think that's really important, is Australia thinks it's a big deal. It's the second largest exporter in the world. And we are, we are a big deal. We punch well above our weight. Yes. But in volume terms, you know, like we're it's chalk and cheese. So I think Australia is acutely aware of Brazil, but it probably doesn't understand entirely the scale of the business. Mm-hmm. We watch you guys closely. I think to answer your other question, Aussies would love more information from Brazil.
Yeah.
I think we're really interested to see, you know, like we're talking today.
For sure.
Production, supply chain, price, whatever. We don't really get access to it. You know, we can go onto the US futures market and get information quickly, but Brazil is not something that I think is reported on widely in Australia, and I think we'd be really interested, which is why I was so keen to get you guys on to hear your views. Really interested in, you know, how Brazil's going, where it's at, what's it doing, etc. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where I got to.
Nice. Yeah, we also want to understand more about the Australian market. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day we'll be doing your office, this podcast, or visiting your clients, and you're more than welcome to visit Brazil, our clients, and our office, and do that, this podcast also there.
I can't wait. You're always welcome. We've got plenty of Aussies that I know would be pretty happy to have you. You've just got to tell them about what's going on.
Yeah, that would be a pleasure.
But thank you for giving up an hour of your time today. It means a lot, and I know the Aussies will enjoy it. So yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having
us. Thanks so much.
Cool. Well, that's all for this week. If you got any questions, send me an email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com, or send me a voice recording of yourself, where you're from, and a question, and I'll get to answering it in the next episode. Today's been brilliant. Very fortunate to have Kale and Victor on board to sit down in person and chat through this. So really good information through that. If you've enjoyed it, follow it on your listening platform or share it with a friend. Appreciate you for tuning in. But until next time, take care, and we'll see you then. Thank you. Cheers.